today. All right. Welcome to the City of Knoxville Board of Zoning Appeals. I am Daniel Odell, Chair of the BZA, and I'll be conducting today's meeting. Alongside of me are the other members of the BZA, and to the tables here to my left are city staff members. Today's meeting will be conducted in the order of the agenda, and agendas are available here at the entry door, at the back door. Pursuant to BZA's administrative rules, each matter on the agenda will be considered in the following order: staff comments, proponents, opponents, rebuttals, discussion among board members, a motion, and then a second, further discussion among board members, and then finally a vote. Members of the public may address the board, and the following rules apply. Each person shall speak for 5 minutes and should not have more than one time to speak, except that the chair may allow an additional 2 minutes to the applicant for rebuttal. When more than one person wants to speak to an issue, each side is limited to 3 speakers with 5 minutes each. The board may ask questions of any speaker and may allow more time or more speakers by a vote. Speakers should limit their remarks to the facts of the case and should avoid repeating comments that have been previously presented to the board. All speakers should come to the podium here in the front and speak directly into the microphone. Speakers need to state their name and address for the record. Appeals of decisions by the BZA are made to Knoxville City Council. A petition for such an appeal shall be filed with Plans Review and Building Inspections Department not more than 15 days from the date of BZA's decision. I will now ask Ms. Scobie to call the roll.
Christina Bowler.
Here.
Ebony James.
Here.
Daniel Odell.
Here.
Grant Rosenberg.
Here.
Amy Sherrill.
Here.
Okay. To get us started today, I need to ask if I could have a motion from the board to approve our meeting minutes from last month.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Moving right along, we don't have any old business from last month, so we'll move directly into new business for this month. 11B22VA, 5910 Holston Hills Road. Mr. Mullins, sir. Name and that. Oh, well, and I will. I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah.
Go ahead. Name and address for the record.
Ben Mullins, 550 West Main Street, here for the applicant.
Thank you, sir. Are there any further comments from city staff?
No comments.
No comments. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Tell
thank
us about
you.
Your application.
Well, I represent Mr. Carr, who's the owner of this property. There is a current home on the property that was built in 1959, basically in the same location as to where we're proposing this new construction. We're proposing to demolish the existing home and rebuild it at basically its same location. And you can look, I've got in the packet, I have an aerial that shows the kind of the homes and the layout. Well, there's one that has a little bit more. You can a little wider view and sorry. Yeah, that one. There you go. The one that's color right there. And you can see the highlighted, that's the current home where the driveway extends down. You'll see you come around the bend there on Holston Hills Road. The houses are, you know, kind of built when they were built back in the 1950s and 60s. They were built in the best location of each lot would allow based upon the existing topography. Some of them are closer up because there's a bluff there as you get to the north where those trees are. Some of them are further back because the topography is actually there in the front. And there's some topo maps in this as well that demonstrate kind of how the topography cuts through this area. I think it's the next slide down. That one is probably the best one to show that. You can see how the topography is pretty sloping until they built that one. That's they did a retaining wall at that location, and that's where the footprint of the home is. So that's the flattest part of the property, and the most natural place for the property to be. Unfortunately, with the new zoning ordinance, that doesn't comply with the existing setbacks. There's a retaining wall. What they do, they do intend to bring the property forward and utilize where that retaining wall, and that's going to be basically the front of the property. The existing home is set back about 324 feet from the road. By moving it forward, they'll bring it up to 289 feet, but it still avoids that topography there that you're seeing. It's where all the infrastructure is. It's already a flat spot. You know, the property does narrow as you get, as you move forward, which starts to constrict the side setbacks as well. So what we're asking is basically utilize the existing footprint that's been there that took advantage of the existing topography at the time, and asking for a variance to build the home basically in the same location as where it was before. I've got Mr. McDonald, Mr. Carr, they can answer any questions. Mr. McDonald's the contractor that's working on this. We've been working through the permit process, but obviously we need to get this variance to move forward. So sure. Any questions, be glad to answer them.
Absolutely. Thank you. For process, is there anyone here to speak in opposition to this request? Don't see anyone. So let's move forward. Any questions from comments from the board? This is pretty straightforward from my perspective. Yeah. It's there's good topography on the site to justify this on it, I believe. Are there any floodplain issues? I don't remember. It may be in the.
I'm sorry.
This doesn't sit in a floodplain, does it? I mean, I would assume it.
No,
doesn't.
No, it doesn't sit in the floodplain. I don't believe. But maybe if you get further back, there's some issues. But you know, you can see they kind of built it in the sweet spot. There's the hillside protection overlay, which kind of. These around it, and this house was this located footprint is located right in that that area where there's no hillside protection.
Yeah, I think this is pretty cut and dry, straightforward variance. I'll make a motion. We approve 11-B-22-VA due to the topography.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other questions or comments? All right, all in favor to approve 11B22VA as it's submitted, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No one's opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Next up is 11D22VA for 4164 Jomindua Drive. You could come on up. And while you're on the way, are there any further comments from the city on this request?
No more comments.
Thank you, sir.
Great. So I'm Sarah Martin. My residence is 1121 Eleanor Street, 37917. And I am the architect on this project, presenting this variance application for a client. So the hardship with this one, the client would like to add a covered front porch to the front of their house. This is in the Forest Heights area. And there is a small addition in the front and then that covered porch. And so you'll see that on some of the site plan that we have there. The hardship is that the existing house is already out of conformance with dimensional standards. And so this is one of those applications where we're requesting a little bit less setback in the front to make it compliant.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone here to speak in opposition to this request? Seeing no one. Comments from the board. White mouse, still
mouse.
Are you
ready for a motion?
What's that?
Are you ready for a motion?
Yeah.
Okay. I think this is a perfectly reasonable request, and so I'll move to approve this as requested, 11D22VA.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any further comment on this? Specifically, Sarah, what is this the hardship again? You're saying it's...
Yeah, it's an existing nonconformance in the dimensional standards, that front setback in particular.
And I'm just rereading this real quick to make sure I understand. Okay. I have a motion and a second to approve 11D22VA. As it's submitted, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Next up is 11F22VA or 124 South Concord Street. Mr. Mullins, again, sir.
Ben Mullins, 550 West Main Street, here for the applicant. And I guess before we start, I've got a group of people on Zoom. They're saying they can't get into the meeting. It says another meeting's in progress. So I apologize. I've got several people that could not make the trip today, but are available for questions that I'm trying to get online here.
It's great. Are we going to, Jennifer, can you get them online? Or is it?
And if you want to go ahead to another application while she's working on that, I'm fine.
Well, that's part of what I was wondering about is if it would, is that a quick fix or something to come back to? Why don't we go ahead, Mr. Mullins, and ask real quick. There's no further comments from the city on this agenda item, I'm assuming.
No
comments. No comments. Ben, if you go ahead and tell us about this variance request. Let's give her time. You can go ahead.
Sure.
We'll go from there.
And this is a multifamily development at 124 South Concord. This piece of property is about 625 acres. It's basically an island. Almost literally when it rains sometimes there beside Tyson Park. It's by, on the north of it is Norfolk Southern Railroad, and we have a railway easement to deal with. It's bounded on the east and the south by the park, and there's a significant amount of floodway that cuts into the property. And then, of course, Concord Street bounds it on the west. It's industrial mixed use, which under the new zoning ordinance does allow for multifamily development up to 50 feet. There are a lot of utility easements on the property. We're working with utility boards on getting some of them abandoned because they no longer serve any purpose. We're relocating some of them, even trying to relocate it across the street in order to make this footprint work. There was an old abandoned factory on the property. I think it's now been raised at this point. This property has been circled around from lots of developers looking at it. It's in a good location. It's close to the university, but it's outside the form-based district. It's got good access to Concord and to the interstate. That area and Sutherland Avenue area is starting to develop and change from being a more industrial area to a more mixed use residential areas as well. But it's a challenging piece of property, and a lot of people have walked away from it because of the challenges that it faces. My mentor, Mr. Seymour, in 2017 had a developer going through the process of trying to get it rezoned, actually approved through Planning Commission to rezone for a planned residential, kind of a high density. It's a very similar concept to what we're doing now. No opposition to it during the rezoning, but actually they ended up withdrawing the application when it was at City Council because they couldn't solve some of the environmental constraints that are on this property and trying to come up with a buildable footprint. So what we've done, and as far as multifamily goes, we're only asking for a single variance, and it's a very, very narrow variance. There's a parking garage on the north, and we're seeking to place our amenities, a pool and a rooftop accessory structure on the top of that parking garage there at the kind of the northwest portion of the property. And you'll see, if you look at the plans, I think A500 is the one, the elevations that really show where this is located. The parking garage and all of the residential units all meet the existing height that's allowed by the industrial mixed use zone. It's just we come up another 11 feet 7 inches for this accessory structure on the top of that garage. It's really the only place we can put it, you know, with regard to, you know, with the rest of the property and the constraints that it has. So it just, it's a very small kind of butts up, you know, almost like an elevator bulkhead would bump up, except just it's a little larger than that. So we're just asking for a variance from 50 feet to 61 feet, 7 inches to accommodate our accessory structure at the top there. You know, there is some grade change. And so we came up, you know, we use the average grade along the parking garage to come up with that area. So it's a very narrow variance just for the accessory structures and considering all the other constraints that we have to work with. We're, I think, pretty proud that we're able to limit it just to one variance on something like this. You usually see a lot of multifamily projects coming through with many more variances than this. So given the site constraints with the easements, the railroad easement, the utility easements, the floodways, just the kind of the pie-shaped form of the lot itself, you know, we'd ask that you approve this variance. And I don't think we have anybody on. So if your questions get too technical, that might be at a slight disadvantage. I'm a lawyer, not an architect. Don't ever pretend to be. But, I, you know, some basic questions I can certainly answer.
Sure.
Okay. Picture. Okay. Aaron. All right. I'll tell Aaron. They're texting me furiously.
Just have a question of clarification. This is when we look at something like this and increasing that, is it only applied as it's submitted here, or could that be So does this only apply as it's submitted here in this image, or would they have the ability to increase the height of other portions of the project?
That's a building code.
Our expectation is that they're submitting this design and they're going to proceed with this design once it's approved, and if down the road they decide to increase the height elsewhere, they could do that, yes. Okay. But our expectation is they're presenting their design as it's presented today.
Okay. If I could say, and I don't know, Ms. McGrons may correct me if I go too far afield on this. I think you can grant a variance for rooftop accessory structures only, potentially a height variance just for that and not the entire, because that's all we're asking for is the variance for that purpose. And if that can't be conditioned, I don't know why it couldn't be, but that's what we're asking for. We're not asking to increase the height for additional residential units. We're not trying to get more residential units than the code would otherwise allow. You know, you see we've built in quite a bit of open space in the interior because the interior is really the only place we can kind of build around. But the height is just for the accessory structures on the parking deck.
So typically we don't advise the granting of conditional variances. Typically we like to keep it focused on the application packet as it's presented in front of you today. And that's in part due to a preservation of the record standpoint. But I'm going to look to Peter Ahrens and Brian Berry here in a moment. I think we're having a little bit of internet trouble, but for further commentary on that. Sorry. I know you were trying to deal with the technology issue. No, I was saying that typically we don't advise the granting of conditional variances. We want it to be based on the packet that's in front of the board submitted, and that's from a record preservation standpoint. Is there anything you wanted to add as far as rooftop structures?
Yeah, you're calling it an accessory structure. What exactly is it?
There's a pool, and then there's going to be like a gym and a bathing area, bathrooms and stuff on top of it.
That might be accessory to the apartments, but that would not be considered an accessory structure for the zoning code.
Oh, I understand. We had that conversation early on that accessory structures can be exempt from the height calculation.
Correct.
The interpretation was that didn't meet that definition. Correct. We're not challenging that interpretation at all.
I don't want you to use the term accessory structure on top of there then, because that means something different in the zoning code.
Yeah.
So that is the structure.
I understand. It is the amenities structure on top of the parking garage.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is building the pool and...
Which is a pool and a bathhouse, a gym.
So it's, something... it's the height of that overall structure.
It's the height
which is
of the
combination of the parking garage and the accessory structure.
That's correct. In order
it's
to...
generating, no.
Amenities structure.
Okay. Amenities. We're calling
the amenities
structure. Hi. Sorry, this is Aaron Stang from Landmark. I apologize. I don't actually know how to turn my video on right now. But the pool itself does not require... a variance here. It's only the clubhouse that attaches to the pool that we're asking the variance for, or whatever the legal definition of that is.
Sure. The not accessory structure.
Actually, on top, the clubhouse amenity on top of the garage.
How big is that amenity space?
About 3,000 square feet, so 3,100 square feet.
Okay.
Just have the drawing in front of me.
And Christina, I understand what you're saying in terms of considering only what's in front of us, and I'm not even going to necessarily challenge this in particular, but I think that from a board standpoint, I'm always thinking in terms of like, what can somebody do if we say yes to what they're asking for? Because by default, there's always an alternative consequence that you need to consider if you're going to say yes to what's being asked for. That's not to say this developer, anyone that you know you would ever present is unscrupulous in that nature or presenting something that's inaccurate intentionally. But I've seen that even recently on a project in South Knoxville that was presented one way and it shows up in the paper completely different than what we said yes to. Now, the variances, you're still within the tolerances that we said yes to, and I get that. The direction he went doesn't work financially. And I wondered that when I saw it in front of us, but we said yes to that and he can, you know, do other things. So
we can have a conversation about that later. Don't believe the paper.
Well, I may not. I'm just saying that, there's alternative.
Even a sale of the property, right? That it's right. Someone else comes in with that variance attached. That's why I asked the question.
Absolutely.
And honestly, from a form standpoint, I don't take issue with the height. Just there's nothing else around this that I think would be to the detriment to offer this, except density. And you're talking about 305 units, and adding another floor would be substantial. So that's the part that I think I'm toiling with as well.
Sure.
Out of curiosity, and I'm probably not the right person to answer this, either our zoning council or some of your planning staff, but could it be restricted such that the fifth floor was capped at a certain amount of square feet? Because we don't need five stories. This is the building we want to build. The only thing that we're asking for is just for this small amenity area.
Sure, we understand that. I don't believe that we can cap it that way. But the actual consequence that you're pointing out that's in my mind is that by approving this additional storage, we are freeing up land area that allows for the building of additional units. If you look at their bed count, there's over 800 beds and about 400 parking spaces. So the next question in my mind is, where do people park over there on Concord Street, where this variance creates more density? By allowing for more parking, you are allowing for more units. And that is understand why the developer might want to do that. And our code does allow for parking to exist the way it does. But, you know, we're getting ready to put over 800 people, and maybe more than that, but 800 at least folks over in this neighborhood. I don't know where the additional parking comes from. Where does the additional parking come from to meet this need? Do we know?
Well, this is on public transit, I believe. There's a public transit there, and we're meeting the requirements of the zoning ordinance as far as the bed count to the parking. You know, that's we're doing what the code allows us to do in as far as that goes. There are additional surface parking, I think, on the kind of the south part, south.
Yeah, I can add a little more color. So there's parking and I want to say it's about 50 spaces between the south and the northeast. It's not shown on this map. The other point I'd make, and this may not change your perspective, but in the event that this variance weren't granted, we'd only be really talking about a loss of 2 or 3 units. We're purely asking for this because it's what, it's what would make a seamless project that feels more natural. The alternative would be to put the clubhouse, say, on the top, on the fourth floor adjacent to the, the one floor below, I guess, the pool deck. So
loss of 2 or 3 units, that doesn't quite make sense to me. You're, is it Aaron? Is that your name? I don't think I got your name.
It's Aaron Stang. I'm a director of development at Landmark Properties.
Okay, very good. Thank you. That would be true if you don't have a clubhouse. I guess you could not build a clubhouse for the pool and you wouldn't be required to have this variance, but to have a pool amenity in the way this is designed, the additional and have a clubhouse that goes along with that, I would see that. I would think that's a whole floor of parking on your garage is the difference. And that's going to back its way into the number of units you could have on the property.
I'm
wrong about that.
The pool would stay on the roof. We don't need the variance for the pool. We only need the variance for the clubhouse. So if we move the clubhouse to, say, one of the programmed amenity areas, of which we have a lot in this project, to be totally clear, even in the worst case scenario where you're swapping out units to make space for that 3,000 square feet, it doesn't functionally change the use, nor does it really change our parking requirements.
It would just be inconvenient.
And I understand your concern on this, and I think there should be a way where we can limit it to just, because the variance ordinance says you're asking only for the minimum variance required for your request. And the way I wrote it up is we're just asking for the variance for these rooftop amenities, and that being part of the rationale to speak to the variance standards is that it's minimum. It's not for the overall building itself, but just for that reason. I think there should be some way that it can be limited. I know it may be discouraged to do conditional variances, but if you do a setback because of lot conditions, that setback is just to the side of the building that's affected by those lot conditions. It doesn't mean they can send a setback every which way. I haven't heard that argument, that rationale really expressed before. And so we're really just asking it for limited to the amenities on top of the rooftop itself. And, I don't know how else we can make the board feel comfortable that we're not going to come in, or somebody else isn't going to come in and do that, unless there's some authority from this board or the city to make sure it's restricted to what we're actually asking for and what we need. I mean, this is an area that's been dilapidated. It's been underutilized for several years. It's not surrounded by anything that can be affected by this, even if we were to build something more extreme, but we're not. We're just asking for what we need to address the constraints of the property, which, I can tell you, I've had several companies look at this and walk away because it's just a very difficult property to develop.
Right.
I'm a little confused about the ability to take the variance and then make dramatic changes to these drawings, just because the variance request is connected to this submission. It says in the request per plan submitted. And in the past we've had, or it's been told to applicants that if they changed it substantially, they'd need to come back. Mm-hmm. So I guess it seems more consistent with the way we've, our assumption in the past that it would be bound to the current drawings.
I think that's right. If I may, just for a moment, when we're talking about a conditional variance, those typically are disfavored. But what we're talking about in that context is something like, we grant this variance from 50 to 61 feet on the condition that you add no more bedrooms. That typically is where we run into trouble in terms of the case law. But as Ms. Bowler said, when we're talking about granting a variance based on plans submitted, where it's just asking for that additional height in one particular spot of the project.
That's right.
I think that's fine. The issue is conditioning it on something unrelated to the variant. I mean, it is related, but you see what I'm saying in terms of linking it with the hardship request. I hope that makes sense. I don't know if I've muddied the waters more or clarified. Mm-hmm. Hopefully clarified.
That's helpful to me. Is it?
Okay. Ben, do you agree?
I would agree with that. And that's what I meant by conditional variance, as far as just conditioned to what we're asking for and nothing else.
See, I think we're all kind of speaking different languages. When Peter hears accessory structures, he hears something else, and I hear conditional variance and I see a red flag. But I hear what you're saying now. So I think we're on the same page.
Okay, yeah. Good.
Any other comments? My other comment is twofold. One is that we've said yes to a lot of variances just right around the corner on Cumberland, which are allowing this entire area of our neighborhood, our community, to be saturated with cars that don't have places to park. And that's continuing to happen with this particular application in front of us. The second thing that I see that makes me nervous is that, yes, there are issues on this property with its floodplain, with its easements that are on it, and other challenges that are there. But I'm not certain what that has to do directly with the need for a clubhouse, which is what this is for. So I'm challenging a little bit the hardship that they've presented in terms of this project as relative to the ask.
I think I agree with that one as well. My only thing, sorry, can y'all hear me? You all hear me still? No? Right there?
Yes, well, we are.
Well, close. That was my question too, the connection between all of the issues that you presented, and then it goes on to say applicant will be denied a reasonable use of the property for the variance, but it really doesn't show me how the variance is connected to all of those hardships and how us approving this would alleviate those other concerns that are named or listed in the hardship
area. Sure, I understand your question, Ms. Jones, and it is reasonable to be able to afford to have amenities on a property, and you know, the amenities, as far as, you know, putting on top of the parking garage, allows us to, you know, also provide all the parking that the code requires with the amenities on top of that without
cutting into the parking. Be clear about that, though, real quick, Mr. Mullins, because those things are tied together in the code, if I'm not mistaken. And somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but your parking weighs in on your number of units. Your units weigh in on the parking. Those two things go hand in hand. And I disagree with the code in the sense that I think the allowance, the tolerances mm-hmm. for a larger unit, the code treats a 5-bedroom as if a family is living there and they're going to have two parking spaces. Yeah. And that's not what ends up happening. This is student housing, and you have 5 kids that live there with five cars. And those would, so you end up with five vehicles and only 2 parking spaces in that unit. And that's the issue that's happened and is happening over there on Cumberland. It's going to get a lot worse with the project we have coming. I can't change the code, mm-hmm. but what I can point out is that this is a very full site, the way it's developed. And if you, there's nothing about, you can put a pool somewhere else. It doesn't have to go on top of a parking deck. The parking
deck. I just wanted to speak real quick.
Aaron, don't, please hold on a second. That's my point. There's a balance between those things. And I want our board to understand that when we're saying yes to this, no matter how it's presented, there are consequences of that bear out across the project site and how this project is going to be ultimately affect the neighborhood. And, you know, there's ways to go to talk about that differently, but those things do weigh into each other. And it's frustrating to me for that not to be understood, and I'm trying to figure out how to accurately paint that picture for those that aren't in that business every day. Is that, and so I don't mean to just completely hammer on it, but it's reality. We're absolutely loading this corridor of our community with a ton of vehicles with the projects that are coming down the pike. It's a concern.
I understand. And I was, you know, looking at the unit ratio. It's on, we have that in the packet. I'm sure, you know, I mean, we do have a higher percentage of one and two and three bedrooms than you typically see. I don't think this is, you know, certainly it's location, students are going to be attracted to this, but it's not just limited to students. And when you have more one, two, you know, bedroom units, that disproportionately affects the number of parking spaces needed under the code, you know, where they reduce it significantly when you have four or five bedroom units. And so I understand your point on that, but allowing to have the, you know, one, two, three bedroom units, that helps address the affordability issue and the workforce housing issue and people that want to, you know, live, you know, to themselves. And this area is changing dramatically. I understand that, but yeah.
There's a part in maybe Mr. Stange, I'm sorry, can answer this question for us, but there's a park right across the creek.
Yep.
Right?
Yes.
That's right.
Is there still a bridge across that creek?
I don't know the answer to that question.
A walking bridge?
There's a greenway there, and I thought this property was connected over there.
It is connected to the greenway, and I do believe there's still a bridge across that.
Okay. Is there parking over there?
And there's public parking in the park for the park, yes.
Yes, there is, next to the tennis courts and underneath the highway.
Is any of that a part, I mean, is any of that parking that's over there, I'm not sure how much is over there. Is any of that a part of the development consideration for this property?
No. So we are just so everyone's on the same page. You know, sure. Our parking ratio here relative to the number of students living on this project when we are complete is just shy of 60%. It's like 55 to 60, somewhere in there. That's higher than the vast majority of the new projects being completed in this market. You know, we were somewhat intentional and recognized that there is a parking problem, and we obviously own the standards. So we, and you may or may not know this, but we actually ended up buying additional space off of the standards original construction plat specifically to address the parking concerns and demand. You know, so that's, we've approached this kind of eyes wide open. Now, look, would I want to have an even higher parking ratio? Yes, but to point to the comments from our attorney here, you know, this site is extremely challenged, and you know, the economics that are provided based on those challenges, you know, have, you know, caused certain constraints, and so this is one of them. I mean, I don't know that we're here today necessarily to debate what the plan is, other than the, you know, rooftop structure that we're asking for, but you know, a rooftop pool is part of what's driving the value proposition for this site. You know, I think we feel good about the parking ratio, despite the fact that, you know, it may not be as high as everyone would like. It's higher than the vast majority of the new product in the market, which we feel good about.
So I don't disagree with you at all, but unfortunately, whether we approve this or not won't change the parking situation, because they're complying as it is. So whether or not they get the rooftop structure for the gym isn't,
because the economics will force them to change.
That's so, but it's not a part of what is here. So I feel like it's unfair for us to go too far on that. I completely agree with your density, and I completely agree on the 4 and 5 bedroom use. But I think we really do have to focus in on just this. I go back to the hardship of how does the, I mean, the floodplain didn't stop us from a whole lot of building. So how is that the hardship for needing the height? So what is the true hardship here?
Yeah, I can give that honest answer. I mean, the honest answer is that this location is not necessarily consistent with a Cumberland Avenue site, right? I think you guys probably all know that from a student housing perspective. And so we are not able to charge the same rents as we would charge if we were building on, say, 18th and Cumberland. One of the ways that we are addressing that issue is by having a rooftop pool and rooftop clubhouse, because it's a value proposition for the students and it drives demand. Now, we can have the pool based on the current code. What we're asking for is the clubhouse as well. Does that make sense? Or I can give more specifics if it's helpful.
No, I hear you, but that means that it's a financial hardship, not a physical hardship. And that's, you know, that's really what we're tasked with is understanding.
Okay, so I can add more to that then. The answer would be that if we had the ability to make use of the floodway, the easement areas, and all of the other things, we could have moved the parking garage, held the same parking count, moved the parking garage down to 3 stories and done an accessory structure on the roof, or not accessory, but whatever that's called.
There's on the east side of it, there's quite a bit that we can't, we can put some surface parking there, and we are putting surface parking there, and it's not shown on the map, it's on the plans itself that we submitted, but there is going to be some surface parking there, but we can't build, we can't go up there.
Yeah, for reference, it's about 2 acres, so it's a lot
there for that reason. So that's, it does constrain what, how we are able to design this, and the way it's designed is pretty much how it can fit in with the environmental constraints on the property.
So you're saying due to the environmental constraints, there's really no other feasible, like,
we could have built a larger footprint of a parking structure, so we wouldn't need to go up on the height for the clubhouse. Okay. If we could, because there's a 500-year and a 100-year and a no-fill zone, we can put some surface parking there, and we've utilized as much of that property as we can for surface parking, but we can't use it to build a parking structure because you can't build up on it.
How are you building the units over that structure?
We're not building units on that either. We can't, into that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to look at.
No fill zone. That, you know, and if you remember some of the rain, that area does flood. It literally does become an island from time to time. So, you know, we can't build into that part of it next to where the park is. That's why Tyson Park is Tyson Park, because it's open space for a reason. So you can't really,
that the area you're referencing is just down on the water, correct? That
strip. It's on that, you know,
it's about a 2 acre portion of the total site size. So it's material. The other thing I would add, which since we're not talking economic hardship per se, but there's environmental concerns on this site due to the historic use that we're going to be cleaning up and during a brownfield program as part of this, capping it, et cetera. You know, putting the pool in ground, if we did have use of the other area that's in the floodway, hypothetically, would be prohibitive because, you know, all that dirt that we're hauling off is going to have to go to a class sub-penalty landfill, which is very expensive. So,
sure.
More color for you.
It was the brownfield issues that caused the development is going forward with the rezoning in 2007 to be pulled from the agenda.
Right. And I'm in favor of development on this parcel. And I understand the environmental constraints and hardships that are here. I think Mr. Stange made the point I was getting to, which is that I don't see the connection between specific variance for the clubhouse. That is a financial hardship in my mind. It's a financial ask versus all of the land-based issues that are there. And I understand that they're trying to create a value proposition there, but we're loading this property with a lot of parking demand. I've worked in this market for a long time, and I personally just disagree with the statements that sorority village is a few hundred yards probably from this property. That's all college student housing. There's more college student housing further to the west of this as well. It may not be solely college student housing, but it will be rented by college students, a large part.
Sure, I don't think anybody disputes that. That would be the likely market for the majority of the units, absolutely.
You know, I'm just wanting our board to understand that how the context of saying yes to a variance like this, which is not necessarily about the parking, but ends up affecting the parking and ends up affecting the overall layout and plan for a site, because of how the code works and that balance.
Sure. And I understand your concern. And the thing with multifamily units that have a high percentage of college students is it tends to be more car storage than car parking, even at this location, just a little further out. You know, there's a greenway trail, They, you know, they park there, live there. They can walk to class. They can walk to campus from that location. So the, you know, there is a less, and there's public transit there as well. So there's a less, yeah, you know, everyday impact for the number of units there.
Yeah, I also, so, sorry, before you move on, one other thing related to public transit, I think is helpful for the you guys to understand. We have on this site, which we wouldn't do if we were on Cumberland, we have a shuttle service that all of our residents are going to be able to use, taking them to and from both campus and the downtown area. That should substantially reduce the amount of parking volume and traffic that come out of the site.
Which was what the university is doing to hotels now, right, to solve their need.
Yeah, and I you know, I get, I don't know. I think my mic is just, I don't know. I think some of that too, like I'm trying to understand, like the hardship, I get a little bit more of that. Thank you for explaining some of that to me. I'm trying to think about some of the stuff that our board president is saying here. Some of it is a little bit too far into you, to me, like it's far off for me to be able to say, to make a decision about something that may happen, may or may not happen. So I'm kind of struggling with that aspect of it. I remember when I was a college student, we had five roommates and only one of us had a car and we all rode together and everything, or we did public. So I can't say what will happen, but I think that it did help me a little bit describing some of those limitations and the alternative. I guess I'm at this point in the conversation, I don't know what I'm being asked to.
Well, the application is in front of us as it's submitted. And my conversation here is about context. So I would, you know, I'll back away from that conversation at this point and ask if there's any motions to present.
I'd like to make a motion. I think there are special circumstances and conditions associated with this property. The hardship, there's some subjective interpretation there, but I'm persuaded that there is a legitimate hardship there, given so many complicated constraints to this board. Relative to the parking, I don't disagree with our esteemed board chair. He makes a very good point, and I share those concerns. However, as it is before us, we're not here to, there are consequences, but I think if denying this application, there would still be a parking challenge with this site. The impact would, you know, it would change some of the ratios. They would lose it. They'd lose an amenity, but there would still be those challenges. That's a fight to be fought at council and through changing the code, right? Which we've dealt with that. So, I shared some of the early concerns. I think those have been addressed. Thank you, Christina, for bringing that up. So my motion is to approve 11-F-22-VA per the plan submitted in this packet. And that'll be my motion.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any other questions? Conversation? Nothing. All right. All in favor to approve 11F22VA as it is submitted, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So motion carries. You're approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next up is 11G22VA. 701 Merchant Drive. Mr. Maddox.
Hey, I am David Harbin. I am the engineer for this project. Mr. Maddox could not be here today. David Harbin at 4334 Paper Mill Drive here in Knoxville. This is for the Wallace Memorial Baptist Church there on Merchants Drive. We are in the process of getting a site plan approved. They're refurbishing the west buildings there and just a little bit of the parking lot. In the course of that review along Scenic Wood Drive, it came to our attention that due to recode, that now that there is a 25-foot setback off of the right-of-way there for the parking lot, In that specific section right there, that curb line is not proposed to change, or the entrances along Scenic Wood are not proposed to change at all. So I guess our hardship here today is that we're respectfully requesting that that parking lot just remains as it is today and as it has been for at least 30 or 40 years. Across the street is a small apartment townhouse complex. So, and they actually even use that parking lot whenever they have parties and other stuff. So I really don't think that they'd be affected by allowing this variance. So that's our request for the variance, and we can answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. I need to ask real quick, are there any further comments from the city on this one? No comments. All right. Thank you. I need to ask if there's anyone here speaking opposition. Seeing none. Comments and questions from the board.
I'm happy to make a motion on this one. I don't see any need to require going back and changing existing conditions here in this case. So I'll make a motion to approve 11G22VA as submitted.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? No one's opposed. Motion carries.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Next up is 11H22VA. John Chandler, 38 or 3928.
Well, I'm not
Mead. Hi there.
I'm your name? John. I'm Kiana, stepping in for John, representing John.
Thank you. You said Kiana. Did I hear that right? Thank you.
For 3928 West Belmead, we would like to request a variance to keep it basically the same. We're building our carport. As you can see, the old carport, it was metal. It's right on the property line as well. So we just rebuilt it. It looks like it was dangerous, you know, so we just rebuilt it. But it's basically right on the same property line. We have a letter from the neighbor saying, you know, it's okay. We didn't even put a hanger overhang so that it wouldn't go over the property line. We just kind of kept it the same, but we just want to make something more sturdy and more reliable for them to park on.
Okay, thank you very much. Need to ask real quick, are there any further comments from the city? There were not. And is there anyone here in opposition? There's not. All right. Looking and so building the carport.
Is the footprint of the carport the same as it was before, or did it get
no,
bigger?
No, it's just longer.
Okay.
And it's attached to the house, but as you can see, it goes right over the same footprint. It's just longer so that another car could be dry as well.
So okay. The aerial photo on the KGIS photo, that's the old carport, correct?
So
it's detached and a little bit smaller. So it's now a little longer and
attached. More sturdy, more not dangerous. Not dangerous. And we have a letter. I don't know if that was submitted from the neighbor saying everything was okay. So.
I don't really see how, given the width of this lot, how you could not encroach upon the setback and provide covered parking. Obviously, it was an existing replacement of an existing carport. We usually give some leeway there, but again, my argument would be based on the narrow space along the side driveway. I don't think there's a way to build a smaller carport and accommodate a covered parking. So based on that, I'll make a motion. We approve 11-H-22-VA.
A second.
Motion and a second. Any other question or comment? I'm with Grant on this. I believe I agree. I mean, there's not a... I swore of a hardship on this one, but it's existing and it certainly doesn't hurt anything. We have the neighbor's approval. Any comment? All in favor to approve 11H22BA as submitted? Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? I'm opposed. Thank you very much. Okay, and we do have, that's the end of our meeting, excluding other business, which I think we were going to talk about briefly. An action item from last month's meeting, which was to put together a recommendation to City Council regarding one of our last month's variance interpretation requests. I don't know how to say that, but.
Interpretation appeal.
Appeal. What do we do, Christina?
Yeah, so I think if the board's desire is to recommend that a certain amount of time be put into the code to limit the timeline on when appeals can be filed, I think you can do that in a resolution. Whatever it is that you all decide, I will take down here. I will prepare a resolution. And as long as you vote on it today and assuming that it passes, I'll get Daniel to sign off on it as the chairperson with the vote of the BZA, and we can submit that to City Council.
Did we talk about a specific time? I can't remember what the time was. Was it a 90 day? Was it a 60 day? It was going to line up with the, it was going to match the appeal, right?
15 days?
Regarding the variances, when to file on those.
I couldn't remember. Sorry, I couldn't remember the discussion, but I thought we wanted to be obviously consistent with our
that's
what variance appeal. Does that make sense? Is that?
It makes sense.
I guess though with interpretations, those sometimes happen.
Yeah.
Prior to variances. So.
And Christina helped me say this right. But the differentiation there is that you have 15 days from when we make our decision. It goes to City Council. It can go to City Council if someone appeals. The big difference in here is that there's no time limit on the zoning official's judgment.
Right.
And so they can come back, and that's what's happened here, is they've come back months after the fact.
It's a backdoor appeal. Yeah.
Exactly. And said, well, we just disagree with the zoning official's interpretation of this particular item, and therefore it needs to go through another process, which would allow what the developer has worked on since then to actually be undone. And in conversation with Christina earlier today, I'd called her and asked her for an update on that ask for my last month's meeting. And my only goal, I think, as board chair is for us to, I mean, the law department will actually lay out the context of what they're appealing and what the code says and pros and cons of all that, the context of all of that. I'm not asking to relay out that context, but for us to simply say as a board, hey, this is a big deal. We think you should pay attention to this, City Council. And that's really it. We think as a board, I think as a board member, that if someone comes through BZA and they have a right to be here, the law department has said this is a legitimate application, which was part of my confusion I mentioned to Christina before, was, is this even legitimate? I mean, this is a vested right, and the law department's position, I believe, is that it is vested once it goes through our process, City Council. And if that's the case, then is it even legitimate? Well, the law department said, well, it's legitimate because they have the right to be here. If you have the right to be here, and then when it gets to City Council or doesn't get to go to City Council, that whatever that decision is after that vesting period, you should be able to count on the variance request that was given. And us just saying that to City Council is simply, not the way I say it, because I put too many words to it, but simply. But.
So rather than give them a specific ask, is that what you're saying? Don't give them a specific.
I'm okay with a specific ask. Our recommendation, we want to say, would be to tie that to the time frame. Absolutely, I can get 100% behind that if we want to do that.
I have no recommendation.
But I think there's going to be a little bit more process. I understand from a law department standpoint, and in terms of like if there is any change needed for the process moving forward, And I'm fine with that moving forward, right? That kind of goes to what we were talking about. So I'm open to whatever the board.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that too. I think as long as, I mean, it's very clear what our intent is. I think we're making that clear to the city, so in law department, so you all can draft. We trust that you guys can think through the problem. That's one thing I was worried about was, is there under unintended consequences for us putting a 15-day appeal period when sometimes appeals don't, like sometimes they happen before a variance is submitted, right? I mean, are those appeals, or I'm trying to think of context of like, a lot of the appeals we get are before it even comes, there's no variance, there's no development plan. They're just challenging an interpretation. So what's the trigger, I guess, for that time period?
One of the things that's weird about it in particular is that it's not the applicant who, like traditionally, if there's a appeal of the zoning administrator's decision, that's the applicant making it. So for somebody who's not the applicant to make that, I feel like that has to do with this.
Yeah, that's the distinction. So maybe we want to make that distinction, like for cases that have come before BZA, any appeal of that variance or of an administrator's decision related to that variance, maybe that's the language we use. Does that make sense? Would that solve the problem? I don't want to get into, I'm not an attorney, so maybe we need to get back to being more general, but I think that's what we need to be looking at. And maybe that's this, that narrative.
I'll be happy to draft whatever you all vote on today, but I would like to get a little bit of specific wording, and then I can tidy it up and make it look pretty for Dan to sign off on. But I think we do need to work on some specific wording. Yeah.
So can you say that one more time for me?
So our recommendation would be to implement a time period for appeals of administrative decisions related to a variance. And it's the same appeal period. So you can't appeal, to your point, to all of our intent. If you're appealing the variance, you're appealing the variance. You can't come back later and appeal the administrator. You can't appeal administrator's decision related to that variance, because we don't want to vote on it. We want to close that loophole and I think there was language in, wasn't there language in the zoning code that got removed?
Correct.
Can we just...
There was.
Maybe that's what we just reinstitute.
So I would encourage you to really focus it on appealing a determination when there has been a public process. Okay. Because there's a lot of determinations. People get zoning letters all the time. And we issue them. Nobody knows about them. So that's why there was the pushback on, we really don't want to put a time limit. But if there's a public process, then the determination associated with anything tied to that public process, whether that's a rezoning, whether that's a special use, those are not applicable here. But if there's a public process as it relates to a BZA variance request.
Is that too vague, though, just saying public process? Do we need to say Board of Zoning Appeals, Board of Construction Appeals, Knox planning? I mean, do we need to be more specific?
I would say for this board, with your purview solely being over the variance process, I would probably limit it to just that.
Yeah.
That's my personal thought. So what I'm hearing, I've typed some notes, Grant, as you've been talking. So I think what we're saying, and Peter, help me with this as well as I'm going through it, but for cases that come before the BZA, any appeal of the variance itself or an interpretation related to that variance made by the zoning administrator need to have the same time period. And I suppose a follow-up question would be that, taking that South Waterfront property as an example, of course, we published notice on that. There is a public process. So I suppose, are we also saying that the appeal of that zoning administrator decision should be heard at the same time and almost taken as a proponent?
Thought on that was that the zoning administrator's opinion is by nature of the variance bound by the variance and the timeline that's attached to that variance, because the opinion is about that variance. Mm-hmm. And that's what was so mind-boggling to me. It's like, how can this be? Because you give an opinion about that variance and then later on the opinion can be challenged. Well,
so it doesn't have to be heard then, but the appeal of the variances or the zoning administrator's determination associated with the variance, you've got a 15-day appeal period.
So they need to be made in conjunction. So
would it come back to, would the interpretation come back to BZA, or would it just go to City Council?
I think what going we're along those lines, it would just go straight to City Council. Is that right? Because it would be part of the appeal of the variance being granted.
No.
Or, see, and that, that's the part I don't like is that we've already made a decision, and so separate. I feel like the administrator's opinion needs to be challenged before we vote, because even in the appeal period, we've already made a decision. And so then that comes back to sort of put us in that same position again. Well,
but at least there's a time frame. But yeah, I get that's what I agree. And that's
keep in mind there's a demarcation between the like the process is up to law department and city council ultimately to talk about whether or not they want to relook at the process.
Yeah.
And even that would include in my mind the timelines associated with that process. It's 15 days, 30 days, whatever it is. I think our only point is to say that these things should be tied together, that the zoning administrator's opinion and the actual challenge of the variance that request that we've decided on are tied together, that opinion is about the variance. So whatever process is in place, those two things go together.
I guess I'm just taking it a step further on the what if. Right. So if that appeal had been brought during the normal appeals process, still in a really awkward spot of do you nullify and go back and have to decide again?
So I've got a solution, maybe an easier, simpler solution. You cannot appeal a zoning administrator's interpretation after a variance has been approved.
And then
I would agree with that. If there was an issue, they would have to appeal it.
They'll appeal the variance,
right?
Or they can if there's another appeal, they want to challenge it beforehand. They can do it challenged beforehand, but inevitably it'll be the variance.
Basically, no notice.
But that's the simplest way to solve it: is that applicants shall not appeal or zoning administrator's interpretation shall not be appealed after a variance has been approved.
Yeah, we hear interpretation.
Is that legal?
Challenges.
I mean, it sounds.
That's what I'm saying, basically. But the we hear interpretation challenges all the time.
Sure.
That's because someone's in the process of getting the permit. They're going through the building permitting process. And so they just disagree with something a ruling that Peter's made. And they come to us saying, hey, that's not right. This is the differentiation here is that this was a decided thing, right? So that's the context.
Right.
I'm not worried about the other part of that process. I'm fine with anyone that wants to challenge Peter's opinion, just like and come to us to talk to us about it, as long as there hasn't already been a decision made.
And we may need to say,
my point too.
Yeah. And it's not an outside third party that's coming in. This is what happened. It's an outside third party that has nothing to do with that project. They're just a neighbor that's come back and said, we disagreed with that opinion and are using that as a lever to try to undo what's going to happen.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is hand in hand with what I'm saying.
It's not
tying those two together and then saying once that period of time for it, the appeal to be or the variance decision be appealed as whatever that is has been ended, that what's ended with that is the challenge of the zoning administrator's opinion.
Yeah, and I'm actually saying trigger it earlier because it's the what if, like, okay, so I challenged the interpretation after we voted.
I would still be okay with that if it's in the. That's a good question.
But what happens?
Well, no, once the variance has been approved or denied, they can't appeal. There's no appeal of administrator's interpretation. It's already been
15 days
adjudicated.
If it's like 15 days or even 30 days.
Well, they can appeal. They're just appealing the variance at that point. They're not appealing the decision. They're appealing the variance, which is fine. It doesn't.
Which they may appeal
as part of their appeal of variance. I guess they could. Well,
it's the time period. If you know that on the front end, you can count on it. That's the thing. If I'm the applicant, I know that on the front end, I can plan for it. If I know it's 15 days, I'm not going to go gangbuster spend a bunch of money during that 15-day period. So I don't think the consequence of it is.
No, I guess it all goes back to me is the decision is about whether or not it comes to us or not. And so whether we even have heard the case relies on a decision to be made. And that feels like that should be part of process here as we're trying to make a decision.
What would happen if during that 15-day, currently 15-day period, after we've made a decision, someone challenged Peter's opinion? We'll come back here, or does it go to city council?
Yes. Ultimately, here's my analogy. You can't write legislation that prevents me from suing you frivolously. If I want to waste my time and money and drag you into court, I can do that. I wonder if it might be better suited if all five of you show up in 2 weeks to city council and sign up to speak to the appeal and articulate how difficult a position this puts you in and how difficult a position it puts everybody in when a determination can be appealed forever. I don't know.
Yes, I think
on the one hand that can be done, but I think if that's the route that you all choose to go, I would say you would need to make it clear that each one of you individually was not speaking for the Board of Zoning Appeals, but you were speaking as a member, an individual member.
Well, that's why I like the idea of a letter. I think we're speaking on behalf of the board. I unfortunately can't attend in 2 weeks. I looked at my calendar. I got little league basketball practice and stuff.
So where are we on what you have? So I did make another notice. You all were talking. Perhaps just a statement saying an appeal related to a zoning administrator interpretation on a specific project, if successful, shall not impact a variance which has been granted previously.
I have a quick question too. I think that sounds good, but any guidance from any other jurisdiction? Do they not have something like this? Any language that we can kind of look to model ours afterwards? Perhaps some other state or city has some type of time limit that we could know? You don't think so? We used to, and we took it out. I'm just wondering if anybody else.
I have no idea. I haven't had time to research anything.
I think that's the simplest way to do it, though, is just saying, no, you cannot appeal an zoning administrator's interpretation, the zoning ordinance related to a variance.
Specific variance
application. Related to a specific variance application after it has been granted.
And let me ask this.
Or after it has been, approved or denied. Now they can still appeal it. It just can't, at that point, they can still appeal the interpretation anytime they want.
Right.
But it will not impact our vote.
Yeah. Would it be helpful? Do you want
that's a very simple language.
An appeal, if successful, related to a zoning administrator interpretation on a specific project, shall not impact a variance which has been granted previously.
That works.
So that's and my next question is: are you wanting to recommend this as a code amendment, or are we just putting it out there saying this is how the BZA feels about what the result,
which would be the same as saying we're recommending either a code amendment, mm-hmm, or recommending that the city engage in a process that actively comes to some
I think that is a code amendment. I mean, that's simple. It's one sentence. Let's do it.
So you're recommending it either as a code amendment or a starting point for the city to engage in making recommendations to the planning commission.
Is there any wisdom to, I mean, why not just say,
what's faster?
Well, I mean, it just depends on what council wants to do. Either way, it does have to go to the planning
commission for approval. But what's I think the fastest way is saying this is what we recommend. And I'm obviously it's going to have to go through the process anyway. They want to change it, they can change it, but that's our recommendation.
Just to include that sentence.
Yeah. I mean,
is it redundant because of the vested rights of the variance process?
The law department, well, go ahead.
The issue is it's arguable.
Is what?
It's arguable.
Oh,
that's
okay.
The issue.
Oh, okay. So this would make it, this would make it more clear.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Right.
Unarguable.
Okay.
Less arguable.
Everything's arguable. Right?
Nothing is ironclad.
As Peter said, less, we can get sued. Any, you know, we can always get sued. This this might happen less, right. Less frequently.
So that's the sentence that you all want me to put into a resolution. And I'm going to put in there too that the BZA is recommending that as a code amendment, or in the alternative, that the city engage in the process of making a recommendation to planning commission.
But under any circumstance that any challenge to the zoning administrator's opinion shall not be retroactive
right.
to a prior variance decision made by Board of Zoning Appeals.
Right.
Do we need a motion to do this and to give Daniel permission to?
Yes.
So moved.
Wait, what'd you say?
So moved.
As a board, we need a motion.
We need a vote on it.
For this to be yes. drafted and to give you the authority to approve it on our behalf, basically.
That's a motion.
Second. I made the motion.
Second. Any further conversation? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? No one's opposed. So and then let's do that. Now, I'm going to go to BZA, but I don't have.
You're going to go to council?
That's what I meant. Sorry, okay. To council. I'm already at BZA.
That's okay.
I'm going to go to council, but what are the limitations are? And I would love it if anybody can go with us, with me, but I'm just going to.
I make a motion that Daniel speak on our behalf at BZA. Or at BZA, City Council.
BZA's,
sorry, messing me up.
Just for Daniel to speak on BZA's behalf, you know,
consistent with our recommendation, our what we just voted on. Don't start talking about parking, and
I won't say.
Okay, so you've made that motion. Do we have a second? Sorry, I'm taking over. Apparently,
actually, can you talk about signage and electric vehicles?
Yes, I'll do that.
That's too. Retail sales of electric.
I'll take all my suggestions all together.
Just dump it all in.
Okay, there's a motion and a second that I'll be able to speak.
Who was the second by? Sorry.
Second.
James, okay.
I would be able to speak on BZA's behalf within this context only. All in favor, aye. Aye. Opposed? No one's opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, Daniel, I will try my hardest to get that to you this
Thank
week.
You very much.
Sorry, I have to ask one clarification. Because so it said if an item has been approved, so that's just to say this is not, it would not count if it had been denied and someone wanted to appeal a decision on an application that was denied, that we're not making a provision.
I think that's a good qualification. I would say it's approved or denied, whatever.
Yeah, I would actually say if it's approved or denied, actually, once it's been voted on. Because I don't know if it's going to make much of a difference, but we might as well make it clear. Yeah. Either way, it's been voted on by us. We don't want it back. We don't want it to come back to us.
So we have a variance which has been granted previously. So, okay.
That has been voted on previously.
Voted on previously.
Instead of granted. It's been
for any application
we've denied it
that
and
has
we've approved
been-
it.
For any application that has been heard by the BZA?
Well, I wouldn't say heard. I would say it's been either approved or denied.
Oh, okay.
Whatever the decision is from BZA is what.
If we were to deny, you still wouldn't, I'm not sure you'd still want that forever. Well, I guess, I don't know. I guess it doesn't matter. Once it's denied, the project won't move forward.
Right. If the variance isn't granted, is there a basis for,
I don't know, but it leaves less open to interpretation.
If Ben Mullins were denied with that rooftop,
true,
he could the accessory structure. He could appeal that,
right?
But
I guess he could appeal forever, anytime, because the project hasn't gone through.
Right, but if he were denied and he wanted to appeal that, I should have called it an accessory structure when it's really not. My determination that that's not an accessory structure, sure. That would be an example where the board would have denied, and then he could have appealed my determination of what type of structure it was.
Mm. But that wouldn't make his project automatically approved, right?
Correct.
So it still decouples it from the variance, correct?
No, it would have been approved because if, and again, follow me, if he called it an accessory structure, if he wanted, if we said it was the building, he was denied. He appealed my determination that it really should have been an accessory structure. Then if it were an accessory structure, it would be exempt from building height
limitations.
Right. So then it would have been, he wouldn't need variances.
True, okay, but so it's still a distinction on an. Well, we would have denied it. Then he would just have it by right. It wouldn't come back to us.
Then I think somebody has to hear whether or not they uphold my determination that it's not an accessory structure on the roof, or they overturn me and agree with Ben that it is an accessory structure.
I'm really okay with that, because if it comes back here at that point in time and it's within that 15-day window, there's no hurt to anybody.
Right. Everybody knows.
And that's
fine. You guys are still dragged into this frivolous lawsuit.
But it's short term,
time limited.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And so for the sake of expediency, what I'd like to do, Christina, is can you get that written up? And we got 2 weeks until BZA. What I'd really like is to have a couple of days for the board to read it before I sign it. Can we do that?
We can. I would, again, though, like to get that language nailed down. So what would you recommend then?
I'm thinking with what we had a minute ago. Just leave it be.
So, okay, this is what I have. An appeal, if successful, related to a zoning administrator interpretation on a specific project, shall not impact a variance which has been granted previously.
Granted or denied?
Is that what you all want to put in there? If so, we need another motion and a vote on that. I know.
I think I agree. I think I'm fine, but I'm asking.
It's too hard for me to think of.
You want here?
Well, it's approved.
An appeal if granted. So it's basically saying that if an appeal of the interpretation has been granted, it cannot have an impact on a previously approved variance.
Yeah, and I'll just say I think if the like in the case that Peter had mentioned, if that variance was denied and they came back with an appeal of the determination that should have been an accessory structure, I still think that's an appropriate thing to come back to the board, because that's a determination.
Right.
I mean, so I don't have any problem with the idea of just making it, if an appeal is approved, then that's kind of where the language is, not the approved/denied part, because once it's denied, like they can't come back with the same exact request. They can come back with something else. And an appeal of a decision is appropriate.
Okay. I'm good with that. Do I need to make another motion? Is that
so we're adding the or denied or no?
No. We're leaving it as is. So yeah, we don't need to vote again. We're good.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Okay. We're good. Meeting adjourned. Thanks. Thank you all very much.